Morning. Today's daf Bava Vasos, Kuf Lamed Zayin. We're in Kuf Lamed Vav Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We are discussing Kinyan HaPeros, the classic discussion in the Gemara, which is coming up a number of times throughout Shas. Machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether how do we view Kinyan HaPeros? Kinyan HaPeros is this idea that I own only the rights to a piece of property. Now, it could be property, it could be movables. We'll discuss more of that over the course of today's daf. But in other words, I don't actually own the title, I don't actually own the item itself, but I just pay us. In other words, there's fruit, there's dividends. I mean, the best way to talk about it is just in terms of land. It's just the easiest way to discuss this. That if I if I have property, so there are two aspects of the property. There's the title to the property, and then there's the dividends of the property, the usage of the property. So, and as we discussed in yesterday's daf, you could split the two. Meaning, let's say, for example, the Gemara's example yesterday, which the Rashi articulated, is that let's say a man wants to get married a second time, but he's got property and he doesn't want the properties to be encumbered to a second wife. He would like the properties to for his children, free and clear, with no mortgages. So what does he do? So what he can do is he can basically now gift over the property to his son, but at the same time, he still wants usage of the land, so he'll divide the two. He'll say to his son, you'll take the title to the property, I'll retain the usage of the land, the payers of the property, and that's a very simple example in which a person now is going to be splitting the title from the payers. So under those circumstances, who has to do the work? Right. And just by the way, in other words, another example that just comes into my head. Another classic example would be every time a woman gets married. Every time a woman gets married, she goes into the marriage. In other words, some of the property could be nechset zon barzel, but nechset maluk property. So that's again same exact idea that she's a title holder to the property. She's the owner of the property, but her husband is the owner of the peros. He gets the fruit of the property. So another simple example in which you could see the title and the pairs are going to get divided. So that was the discussion we had yesterday, and that's not a discussion. That's a simple case. That's a fact. What we discussed yesterday was if you're the king and pairs, if you have just the rights to the fruit. So what kind of ownership interest do you have in the item? Are you considered like an owner in the item, like a part owner in the item, or no? King and pairs is really nothing. It's just you just have rights, but you're not considered an owner in the property itself. What did we see yesterday? Machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in terms of how do you view king and peros. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that Kinyan HaPeros is Kinyan HaGuf, that if you have rights to the produce, that is considered like you are an owner in the item. You are an owner in the item, and you have the same ownership rights that the owner of the guf has as well. The Reish Lakish, on the other hand, disagrees. He says, no, Kinyan HaPeros lav Kinyan HaGuf. It's not considered a Kinyan HaGuf. Another example that we talked about yesterday is, let's say you are leasing a property, you're not the owner of the property, and now you have fruit on the property. Can you bring the fruit up to the Beis HaMikdash for the mitzvah of Bikurim? Well, not can you, but are you obligated to? And furthermore, can you do the mitzvah of being makri? Can you read the parsha in the Torah where it says, Es ha'adama she'nasat ali, the land that you gave to me, is it your land? If all you're doing is just simply having the ownership of the peros, but you don't have the ownership of the guf karka? So once again, same machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says, maybe you bring the Bikurim and you read as well. Because even though you're only a kid, you only have a Kinyan HaPeros, according to Rav Yochanan, Kinyan HaPeros is Kinyan HaGuf. And therefore you can legitimately say, Es ha'adama she'nasat ali, I am an owner of the land. Mashenkin, according to Reish Lakish, no, mevi ve'inu kare, you'll bring the Bikurim, but you're not going to read it. Because you can't say, Es ha'adama she'nasat ali, it's not your land. You only have a Kinyan HaPeros over that land.
Rav Yochanan then considers Shutfen?
Yeah, another right. I don't know how to articulate in those terms. Meaning, are we partners? Are we different types of owners? That's why I carefully structure my sense. Say he is an owner, but in other words, what kind of owner is he? Right. That's
bifurcated ownership.
It's unfair, David. It's unfair. You know these legal terms that I'm unfamiliar with. But okay, all right. Esve. The Gemara quotes now a brisa question. Oh, sorry, Eitzve is a challenge, and as we're going to see, the upcoming brisa is going to be challenging towards Reish Lakish. Eitzve Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. The Gemara is going to challenge Rav Yochanan directly. Challenge Reish Lakish from the following brisa. We're on Kuf Lamed Vav Amid Beis, about 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Nichzel achavacharecha yirash poni vacharecha yirash poni. So a person gives a gift of, let's for now, for our purposes right now, say property. And let's say that he gifts the property and he designates a first beneficiary, second beneficiary, and a third beneficiary. Okay, now the whole structure is a little bit strange, and I know these discussions are a little bit weird because how can we have a second beneficiary and a third beneficiary, right, of a piece of property? Meaning, when if you're identifying a second and third beneficiary, what is that first beneficiary? Is he like owning it now, or is he just simply having a temporary usage right to the item? Anyway, that question is going to be explored in just a moment. Let's just get comfortable with the Braisa and the point the Braisa is making. So, so my estate is going to go to you, follow them by, he identifies a second beneficiary, follow them by a third beneficiary. So now, so if everybody dies in the right order, and that's, you know, it's not easy, but if everybody dies in the right order, so then everything's good. Meaning then we're going to follow the instructions of the original gifter. The original gifter says A, B, C, so then it was given to A, then A dies, and B given to B, and B dies, so then it's going to give to C, and we're going to follow the instructions of the original gifter. However, may Sheni b'chayei Rishon, however, if let's say Sheni dies b'chayei Rishon, so let's say B dies before A. Okay, the original gifter didn't want that to happen, didn't expect that to happen, but that's how life works, and that's how death works. It happens. So B dies before A. So now we don't have, C is not going to be a beneficiary because C is only going to be able to get it from B, but B never received it because B predeceased A. So under these circumstances, what happens? Yachzru nechasim leYorshei Rishon. So now what's going to happen is it stops with A. A now is the going to be the end user, the final owner, and it doesn't go to B because B predeceases A, and it's right, and he's not there. And the instructions were very clear: it's got to go from A to B, but it didn't go from A to B, so it stays with A. So that means it stays with A. It means that when A dies, so that means that C's not going to get anything, and it also means that Yorshei A, not exactly the Gemara's language, but Yorshei A are going to be the inheritors of that item. Now,
this is succession that the guy designated. Mm-hmm. Now, why wouldn't it just be that if B is not there, it's just going to go to C? So it's just a reason.
He wants the sequence.
He was very specific in the order.
A is still alive.
He said that B must precede C, otherwise C is not going to get anything.
Right. And if he didn't say that, in other words, but that's the understood implicit condition in his statement. Now, the Gemara says, V'im Isa, now, again, this is now Rav Yochanan challenging Reish Lakish. Let's say Reish Lakish, you're right. Now, we are going to assume, because that's what the Gemara is assuming, so we're going to be very acquainted now with the Gemara's question. We're going to assume that, how is it possible that this property can jump from A to B, from B to C? It must be, this is the Gemara's assumption right now, it must be that when A gets it, A's not getting title. Because if A's getting title, so then it's A's. What A must be getting is Peiros. And if B is getting it, B is not getting titled, B is getting Peiros. And C is finally going to get Peiros and Guf. But the Gemara says, let's think now, Reish Lakish, if you're right. So you know what, Reish Lakish, your position is very difficult over here. Now again, Reish Lakish says,
who has the title?
Right. So wait one second. So Reish Lakish says that Kinyan Peiros Lavke Kinyan Guf. That if you just have ownership of Peiros, so according to Reish Lakish, you're not an owner. You only have usage and that's it. So now the Gemara says, so let's really think about this. Meaning this is Rav Yochanan's point to Reish Lakish. Let's think about it from your perspective. So A received it. Now again, the Gemara is assuming right now, it's an assumption, the Gemara is assuming right now that A doesn't have title. Okay. And the only thing now that A has is just Peiros. He just has usage of it. Now according to you, Reish Lakish, usage is nothing. Nothing meaning you're not an owner. So now, in the Bryce scenario in which, if A, B, C die in that order, so then everything is followed according to the instruction of the original gifter. Fine. But the Bryce says that if, let's say, B dies before A, so then the buck stops with A. In this case, the property stops with A. According to you, Reish Lakish, why should it stop with A? What should happen to the property according to you, Reish Lakish? What should happen is it should go back to the original gifter. Now, if the original gifter is not alive, fine, give it to the Yorshe. Give it to those who stand to inherit the original gifter. Because think about it, if A is only receiving just the peros, he's not an owner. So I understand that we weren't able to fulfill the instruction of the gifter because the gifter said it has to go in the sequence of A, B, C. So I get it that it doesn't go to C, but why should it go to A? A, the only thing he has is peros. He doesn't have guf, and according to you, Reish Lakish, peros is nothing. He's not an owner. So why should it go to the Yorshe A? What it should go is all the way back to the gifter, to the original owner, and it should go to his Yorshim. And Reish Lakish, how are you going to deal with that?
So the Gemara saying if the C dies,
presumably. But when the Gemara has the Brisa, so we're just dealing with what the Brisa is presenting us. Mm-hmm. So I'm like Vartikama Ravosha Bebavel. So the Gemara quotes that, you know what, Rav Oshi already thought of your issue, and he says, Acharech Hashani, V'chein Rami Bar Rav Huna, Kamed Rav Amar, Acharech Hashani. Oh, this is a case of Acharecha. It's different. Now, the Gemara is not really that clear in terms of how the Gemara is answering the question. The Gemara is just simply saying, this is a case of Acharecha. This doesn't enter into our discussion. Why doesn't it enter into our discussion? So, I have the Rashbam to lean on. We're going to lean on the Rashbam. Rashbam over here, second to last Rashbam on the Amud. Acharecha Shani, Acharecha is different. The Rashbam writes, Demashma Degufa Peres Nasan L'Rishon. The Rashbam says, here's part of the assumption that we're changing. We thought originally that in the structured gifting of A, B, and C, A and B are only getting Peres. That's what we thought. That's a Havamina. Now what the Rashbam is telling us, and this is the Gemara's answer, is that what's changed now? What's changed is that, no, A received Peres and Guf. B is going to receive Peros and Guf. And same thing with C. Dahabed Japirish Achrecha Yurishponi. Vaha Lesa Delirash Hilka Chishar Biagar Sherishon. Dahachi Kamerle. This is the understood statement of the original gifter. Kol Yamecha Yechaya Koshucha. Meaning, I'm giving it to you. When I'm saying giving it to you, meaning this is the instruction from the original gifter to A. I'm giving everything to you. So Yeha Koshucha. Hapriva Guf. Umash Ishtar Achrecha. Now, it's yours while you're alive, and you do with it whatever you want until you die. And then after you die, so now we're in my instruction. My instruction is Yikaba Ploni. So then it goes to B. V'im Haya Rotzer Rishon Yachulim Korah Guf Kedila Kaman. Now that means that while A is owning it, and while A is alive, he's a full owner. As a full owner, and we're going to see this in the Gemara in just a moment, the Rashbam is foreshadowing, so then A could do whatever he wants with it, including he can even sell if he wants to. He can totally consume it if he wants to. Meaning, what now we're understanding the instructions are is, A, you're going to take it and you're going to enjoy it while you're alive and you get everything. Guf and Peros. If there's anything left over, it'll go to B. B, same thing to you. You have everything while you're alive. And then, if there's anything left over, it all will go to C. Okay.
Is it a concept like maternal and
not last? Okay, stay tuned. Stay tuned. That's coming up.
When A dies, it goes back to the original, and the C gets, B gets.
Okay, I see the way you're viewing it. That's fine. Okay, stay tuned. That's coming up. It's coming up. Okay. I do hear you. The Atanya, the Gemara says, Yachzul Yoshin Hosein. Now the Gemara says, now I have another Braisa. And the other Braisa actually says that it's going to go back to the original gifter. Now again, if the original gifter is not alive, that's fine. It'll go to the estate of the original gifter. And the Gemara says, and now what? Meaning in this Braisa, unlike in the previous Braisa, which we grappled with, which said that it goes to Yorshe A, now the second Braisa says it goes all the way back to the original gifter, which is kind of what we proposed a couple of moments ago. So the Gemara concedes Tanahi. So the Gemara says, you know what? The Gemara says, I'm going to have to tell you, it's the obvious conclusion that this is subject to a machlokes tonight. We're now on the top of Kuf Lamed Zayin. Very top line. Nichz alecha v'acharech laponi v'yared v'yishonu machar v'achal sheni. I'm sorry, v'achal hasheni motzi miyad l'kuchos divrei Rebbe. So if a person, again, sets up where he's gifting his property to so-and-so, and then designating a second beneficiary, and now the first person does what he thinks is okay, which is, he sells it. He sells everything. So then hasheni motzi miyad l'kuchos divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe, according to Rebbe, so what Sheni does, what the second beneficiary does, is says to the first guy, no, you have the... You You had ownership of it, but you didn't have the right to sell it. You had usage of it, but you didn't have the right to sell it. So Rebbe says that according to Rebbe, the second beneficiary can actually go back to the first beneficiary and rescind his sale. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, Amar Ein L'Sheni, Ela Mashashia Rishon. And Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion, when the first person has it, the first person can do whatever he wants. Because according to Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, when the first person receives it, he receives a complete gifting of the item. And even though there was a second and maybe even a third beneficiary who was set into play, but they're only receiving what is left over according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. V'rimenu, the Gemara says, now I'm going to ask you a kasha because we're going to have another braisa, and this other braisa reads as follows. So here we had in this next braisa, again the same structure where a person is dying and he is designating a first and second beneficiary of the property. Yared Rishon Amocher Va'ochel Divei Rebbe. Now in this braisa, according to Rebbe, what can Rishon do? Seemingly, whatever he wants. Now that obviously is an exact contradiction to what we just saw Rebbe say 5 lines ago in the Gemara. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel Amar Ein L'Rishon Ela Achilas Peres Bavad. And Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says, well, no. What the first person can do is only eat the fruit, but he can't do anything more than eating the fruit. That too is going against what we just learned in the name of Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, because we just learned in the name of Shimon Gamliel that the first person can sell it, because he has everything. He has full ownership of it. So the Gemara points out, Kasha the Rebbe, the Rebbe, Ud the Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, the Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. What we have now is a very basic contradiction between both Tanayim. So the Gemara's response is like this: the Rebbe lo Kasha had lagufa ala pera. So the Gemara says, as far as Rebbe's concerned, not a stira, not a contradiction. Meaning, according to Rebbe, when we said that the first one can do whatever he wants, that's talking about the peros, because he has the rights to the fruit. Fruit, you can eat it, you can sell it. Title, you can't touch it, because it's not yours. In other words, according to Rebbe, the way that the first, second, third beneficiary structured gifting is understood is that the only thing that's given over to the first beneficiary is only the fruit that he can consume, but the title, he has no right to sell it. It's not his. So now we understand Rebbe very well. The braisa that says that according to Rebbe you can eat it, it's talking about the peros. The braisa says that according to Rebbe you can't sell it, that's talking about the goof. So according to Rebbe, we're good. Now, So the Gemara says, now according to Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, how do you understand the discrepancy between them? In braisa number one, according to Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, you know what the second person gets? Whatever's left over. Because the first person can do whatever he wants. In the second price, what do we say according to Rebbe Shimon Gamliel? First person shouldn't sell it. So how do you understand that? The Gemara says, I'll tell you how you understand that. This is my presentation. These are my words. But I think this is exactly what the Gemara means. There's basically letter of the law, and then there's spirit of the law. Look, according to Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, when a person is setting up a gift in which there's going to be a first and second beneficiary, so the letter of the law is when the first one receives it, he receives everything. He receives guf and he receives peros. But he also knows that there is going to be a second beneficiary, so that in the event that there's anything left over, it's going to go to the second beneficiary. So now, the Gemara basically is saying like this. The letter of the law is that when the first beneficiary receives it, it's his. And he can do whatever he wants with it. On the other hand, he also knows that there is a spirit of the law. The spirit of the law is that the original owner wants the second beneficiary to enjoy some of it. So, keep that in mind. Meaning, can you sell it? The answer, of course, is yes. Because it's yours. But keep in mind that the original owner wanted that person to become a second beneficiary if and when you predecease him. So, with that understanding, so should you sell it? No, you shouldn't sell it. Can you sell it? Yeah, absolutely. That is the Gemara's explanation of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Amar Abaye, and to this explanation of Rav Shimon Gamliel, which by the way, that's the halacha, meaning the Gemara is assuming now going forward that the halacha is going to be like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that if a person is gifting property over to somebody else in the structure of a first and second beneficiary, so while the first one has it, he's the full owner. But he should also understand that there is an intent of the gifter, which is, I do want the second person to get it. So if you could please take good care of it, don't sell it, meaning you can, but keep in mind that I want there to be a second beneficiary.
What happens if he sells it?
There's nothing. I mean, what happened? Nothing. It's his. It's totally his. No recourse. So Amar Abaye, so the Gemara says, so now with that in mind, the Gemara wraps up this discussion with a statement by Abaye. Ezu Rosh Aram, who's somebody who is wicked but cunning? Meaning, operating totally within the letter of the law, but really violating the spirit of the law. So the Gemara says, in other words, if I go over to somebody who received the land and is a first beneficiary, and there is a waiting second beneficiary, if I say to that person, you know, I went to the daf today. Here's what I learned. You own it. It's really yours. You can do whatever you want with it. And you know what? You should sell it, because there's no recourse, because it's yours. Now, I know that the gifter wanted there to be a second beneficiary, but that's if there's anything left over. There doesn't have to be anything left over. You know what I mean? So if you give that kind of advice, so Abaye describes you as a Rasha Arum, meaning you're a cunning Rasha, meaning you're operating within the letter of the law, but totally violating the interest and the will of the original gifter. I'm Rav Yochanan Alach Rishim and Gamliel. The Gemara says that the Alach in fact follows like Rishim and Gamliel. Umoda Shiim Nastam Bematanish Chemera Lo Asa Klum. Now, Gemara says like this. So first of all, establishment like the halachas like Rishon and Gamliel, which is again, that in a case where a person's gifting property to somebody, is setting it up with a directive of first beneficiary, second beneficiary. So as long as the first beneficiary has it, he has all of it. It's all his. The Gemara says that's the halacha follows like Rishon and Gamliel. Now the Gemara says, but let's throw in one more little detail into this halacha. And that is, that in the event where, let's say, the first beneficiary, so as a matnash chimera, meaning the first beneficiary now is dying, and what he does is he's gifting over this property to somebody else, not the second beneficiary. Second beneficiary is already set up. So he's gifting it to somebody else through the mechanism of Shchiv Meira. Shchiv Meira, which we already discussed, and we're going to continue to discuss throughout Baba Basra, is this idea that when a person's dying, and he gives instruction, so we follow his instruction, and he doesn't need a kinyan, and it's going to be effective. Effective when? When he dies. Or to be more accurate, after he dies. In other words, that the...
Reactive.
Right. Yes, in other words, correct. Meaning retroactive to the time he says it, but in other words, its effective is going to be after he dies. So what the Gemara now is teaching us is the following. And it's a very... I know, I understand. So it's really a detailed halacha. But in the event where you have a first and second beneficiary, and the first beneficiary, which again, the halacha falls over Shem and Gamaliel, which means that he's the owner, and he's the full owner. If he now is going to try to give the property to another recipient other than the second beneficiary, and he does so through the mechanism of matna shchivmira, lo asa klum. So the Gemara teaches us in the name of Yochanan, that's going to be ineffective. My time. And now why? Why is that going to be ineffective? Isn't it his? Amar Abaye matna shchivmira lo kana ela la'achar misa ukvar kadmu acharecha. So the Gemara says, yes, it's his. But over here, it's just a question of the mechanics of how it works. Matna shchiv meira is going to be where his instruction is to give to so-and-so because he's dying, and it's going to be effective when? After he dies. But you see, in this structured setup, remember, there already was a first and second beneficiary. So basically, it's just a mechanical issue, which is that the second beneficiary precedes the designated recipient of Matna shchiv meira. Because Matna shchiv meira only happens after he dies. Acharecha happens, I know this is going to sound funny, but basically, either before or during his death.
But acharecha is a contingency.
No. Right. I totally hear you. In other words, if I didn't see the Gemara and I left to my own devices, I would have said something like a tie or a draw or a stalemate. I would have said something like that as well. The Gemara clearly favors this idea that acharecha kicks in before Matna shchiv meira. And the Gemara says it clearly. Umi Amar Abayach, the Gemara now just wants to clarify, did Abaye really say that? And the Gemara is going to basically say, yeah, he did say that. But let's see this inside. Umi Amar Abayach, Matna shchiv meira mei masai kana. From what point in time is the Matna shchiv meira going to acquire? Abaye Amar im Gemara Misa, Virava Amar la'acha Gemara Misa. So again, the Amaraim are debating, basically, when is this moment of Matna shchiv meira? So Abaye uses language of im Gemar Misa. Rava uses the language of after Gemar Misa. The only problem is that we want Abayi to say La'achar Misa, because again that fits into the statement of Abayi said previously that the Acharecha transfer kicks in before the Matnas Chimera transfer. So the Gemara says Ahadar Be'ah Abayi Me'ahi. So the Gemara says very simply, yeah, Abayi at one point did say the words Im Gemar Misa, but then Abayi just retracted his statement and corrected himself. Why? Gemara says, how do I know from what statement he retracted from? Lo sagadacha. The Gemara says, I know which statement he retracted from. A person tries to give a get post-mortem, meaning he makes the declarative statement obviously while he's alive, but he wants it to be effective. Either with the words are Im Macy, right, if I die, or the Micholizer from this illness, or Lachem Misa, so under those circumstances, Lamar Klum. Now, clearly, that's an attempt of a Manash Chimera. That is not going to, in other words, well, let me say this clearly. Clearly, the get doesn't work. The Mishnah tells us the get doesn't work. Why doesn't the get work? Because we have a principle, a fundamental principle of Ein Get La'achar Misa, that there's no post-mortem get. So can't we say that, well, he's not giving the get after he dies, he's giving it while he's dying, right? At the conclusion of his dying. So clearly, the Mishnah is not taking that as even a suggestion. And the reason why is because the way the Mishnah understands it clearly is that it means after I die. So the Gemara says, that's how we're going to have to understand Matnas Chimera in general. Matnas Chimera, the actual transfer is going to occur after the person dies, not during his death, not at the end of his death, but only afterwards. So again, the Gemara, this is what leads us to assume that when Abaye retracted, his new understanding is going to fit in with the Mishnah. It's a Stam Mishnah that the Matnas Chimera only is going to take effect after the person dies. And that's why Abaye is assuming, like Rav Yochanan, that the Acharecha transfer is going to kick in before the Matnas Chimera transfer.
I just want to just mention about the get. That principle came from Moshe Mitzrayim.
Yeah, that's right. That's Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Okay, I'm Rabbi Zera, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha Roshim and Gamliel, Ve'afila Hayubahem Avadim, Ve'otzion Lecheiros. So the Gemara says the Halacha is like Roshim and Gamliel. Now I know the Gemara already told us this before. The Gemara just simply emphasizing how much is the Halacha like Roshim and Gamliel. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of examples. Example number one. Again, the idea is that a person is gifting over his property with an establishment of your first beneficiary, your second beneficiary. So we are saying very clearly, very unequivocally, that the first beneficiary, while he is owning it, is a full owner. Owner of rights, owner of the item itself. The Gemara says, to what degree? So the Gemara says, basically, to the nth degree. And now the Gemara is just giving examples of what it means to the nth degree, that the first beneficiary is the full owner. Let's say, for example, part of the estate that was gifted to him was slaves. He can free them. Now, of course, meaning you're the owner. So you could, once you're the owner, you could do with it whatever you want. I feel I am avodim v'otzim lecheres. So the Gemara says pshita. Now the Gemara says, now why is that so obvious? I mean, sorry, let me say that better. That is obvious. It's so obvious that, in other words, why would I thought otherwise? So the Gemara says, well, you can make the following argument. We all know that although a person has the right to free his slave, as Evikanani, on the other hand, the Torah says, La'olam am tavodu, that they have to work for you indefinitely. We're talking about an Evikanani, we're not talking about an Evid Ivri. Evid Ivri obviously has terms in terms of how long he can work. In terms of an Evikanani, the Torah says, La'olam am tavodu. So you shouldn't free the slave. If you do so, the slave goes free, but you shouldn't do so. So I might have thought that even though the first beneficiary has full ownership, but still, the gifter basically saying to him, look, it's yours, you own it while you're alive, but like, don't do anything that's against the Torah. So the Gemara says, but again, full ownership means full ownership, and even though the Torah says, Lo lamam tavodu, if you freeze the slave goes free. I'm Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Yochanan, Alach Rishim and Gamliel, V'yafilu asan tachrich lemeis. Again, the Gemara just gives another example of how much the halacha falls like Rishim and Gamliel. So let's say, for example, the first beneficiary takes part of the that which was gifted to him, their linen clothing, and he makes tachrichin for the dead. So the Gemara says, once again, the idea is, it's his. He can do with it whatever he wants. And again, the Gemara is basically saying, what new idea have you introduced over here? Pshita, it's obvious. Gemara says, because I might have thought as follows. Look, it's yours, you can do whatever you want with it. But to turn it into something which now nobody can get benefit from, like, come on. Like, you're not the owner to that extent. And the Gemara's basic response is, yeah, you are the owner to that extent. All right, next. Okay, so now basically, with our new understanding of what second and first and second beneficiaries are, and with the idea that the halacha falls to Rishon and Gamliel, so now we're going to translate this into another halacha where we know ownership is a key component. We know that on Sukkot we have a mitzvah in the Torah to take lulav esra. We have to take the dalminim. We also know that on day one, it's the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah. We also know that on day one, the Torah tells us that we have to take it. And ulakachtem lachem b'yom harishon. You have to take something which belongs to you. So in other words, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav esrog on day one, so you have to take an esrog that you are the owner of that esrog. And when I say esrog, of course, I mean dalaminim. It's true by all four species. I guess the Gemara always focuses on the esrog because it costs the most. So anyway, but you have to be the owner of the item. So now, in our discussion of first beneficiary, second beneficiary, so the Gemara basically is going to explain. So, and
the peros over there. So.
Huh?
The peros. I mean, your kaka, your peros.
Right.
Eslog.
Right. Okay. Fine. Wait. Just one second. I hear you. Just one second. So, Darsh Rav Nachman Rav Chis Esrog Zed Nasanuk Mematan Vacharech Laploni. So now, the first person receives it, and then Acharech Laploni with again the designated second beneficiary. Now, Larishon VeYatzabo. So now, the first person takes it. So, was he Yotzi Zayin? Did he fulfill his obligation of Lekachta Mechem Yom Rishon? So the Gemara says, Banal Machlokas Rabbi Yishem and Gamliel. So the Gemara says, well, depends. Meaning, if I follow like Rishon and Gamliel, the answer would be sure, because like we've said, the entirety of the first amud of today's daf, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that the first one is the full owner of the item, and therefore the first person is going to be yotze with it. Mashenkin, according to Rabbi says that no, the first one is only a owner of the peros. Now Phil's point is excellent, and you know, now I'm just going to reiterate what he asked me a moment ago. What exactly does that mean? The peros of the esrog, right? Okay, I'm smelling it maybe. Okay, but anyway. Huh? But eating it, no. If you, in other words, you're eating it, that's it. You're taking it out of this world. According to Rebbe, it's, you know, it's, you only have
smelling it.
Yeah, smelling it. That's why I thought also. Okay, so Maskel Rav Nachman Yitzchak Ad Kan Lo Pligi Rebbe Rishon Gamliel Asam Ella Ella Demar Savar Kinyan Peres Kikinyan Aguftam Imar Savar Kinyan Peres Lav Kikinyan Aguftam. So the Gemara says now. Look, the whole debate between Rabbi and Rishon and Gamliel is how to view Kinyan Peres. Is Kinyan Peres considered Kinyan Aguf, yes or no? Elahacha, imepik, lo napik bay, lama yehavina na'alei. But the Gemara says, but listen, over here. The person is giving an esrog to somebody. Now, granted that there is a second beneficiary. But the Gemara says, but come on, I'm giving it to you. What would be the point of me giving it to you if there's nothing you can do with it? That's not... that's
you're Shomer.
Yeah, I mean, but okay, but that's not... Right, but Shomer means that you're nothing. Shomer just simply means, you know, I have responsibility. Okay, fine. But the Gemara's assumption is that a matana means I'm giving you something. So, imapik lo napik bay la mayavina alay. Ela mapik dekuleam lo pligid napik bay. So the Gemara says, look, I have to assume... I mean, the Gemara's saying this. I have to assume that even according to Rebbe, when the first recipient receives it, so it means that he could be also designed with it. So, machra u achla banalachlok is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says, what really is only left for discussion over here is that, what if you do eat it? Meaning, can I be yotze my mitzvah of lulav and esrog? Yeah. The answer is yes. If I do eat it, so do I have to make restitution? That's the machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Whereas according to Rabbi, the answer is yeah, I'm going to have to make restitution. Because I didn't have the right to destroy it. I only have the right to use it. And using it, part of usage means I'll fulfill the mitzvah of lulav esrog. But in terms of eating it, the Gemara says, according to Rabbi, you'd have to make reimbursement. According to Rosh Shimon Gamliel, you would not have to make reimbursement.
What is the definition of ownership then?
Right.
I mean, that's the question of conditional ownership and full ownership.
Right.
There are two different entities.
Right. So I'm going to throw out a new term for today. Which, by the way, I mean, in other words, Phil already saw this coming, at the beginning of the year today. I'm going to throw out a new term today, and that's going to be temporary ownership.
I understand.
In other words, the idea of matana manas lahachzir means I'm going to be receiving it as a gift on the condition that I return it to you. Now, if I have to return it to you, I obviously can't eat it. Right? We're in agreement. So, but meanwhile, we all know the halacha is that matana manas lahachzir works. In fact, it's coming up in today's daf. It's coming up in a couple lines from now. So there's this idea. I know it's a difficult idea. I'm not going to evade the issue. I know it's a difficult idea, but the idea of temporary ownership. And the Gemara is basically saying that according to Rebbe, that's how we look at it.
Some aspect of ownership.
I agree with you. But that's the idea. Amarava Baravuna Achin Shekanu Esrog B'Tvus Zabayis. Okay. Gemara now discusses the following. We're looking at an estate, and the estate has not yet been divided. So right now, the estate is some sort of entity. Okay. But, in other words, then we all have shares in the estate, but it hasn't been divided yet. So, it's kind of like a trust. So now, Amarava Baravuna Achin Shekanu Esrog B'Tvus Zabayis, Nadlu Echamehem, V'Yatzabo, Im Yachula Ochlo Yatza, V'imlav lo yasa. So the Gemara says that under these circumstances, so now you have one of the brothers, and he goes to the wherever the estate is being held, and there's an esrog over there. And so now, can he use that for sukkahs? Can he use that to fulfill his mitzvah? So the Gemara gives the following criteria, which is, well, it depends. If he can take it and he can eat it, so then it's his, and therefore he can fulfill his obligation. Otherwise, he can't. Vidavka diika esrog l'chol chav echad ava pris or rimon lo. So the Gemara says, but that's only if the there's an esrog for everybody. But if not, then he can't. Now, interesting, very interesting. Let's do it this way. Let me first read a little bit more Gemara, and then I'll come back and I'll do a Rashbam, really important Rashbam. So Amar Rav Esrog Zenas Nalach Bematana Amanah Shetachziri Li Nalo VeYatza Ba Echziru Yatza Lo Echziru Lo Yatza. So the Gemara says that if I give an Esrog to somebody as a gift and I make the gift conditional, and you know what the condition is, I throw into the gift. The condition is very simple: you gotta return it to me. If you return it to me, then the gift was a valid gift. And if you don't return it to me, the gift is not a valid gift. So kamash malanda matana manasachzir shma matana. So the Gemara says, so you see over here that A, matana, which the condition is that you must return it to me, is considered a full-fledged matana. How do I know that? Because we just saw it together, that you could be yotzei with such an esrog that was given to you with a matana amanas lahachzir. Okay. Where are we right now? Where do we stand right now in terms of the definition of ownership? So the truth of the matter is, it's really difficult. Meaning, here's what's very clear from the Gemara that we just all learned together. That if you own an item, and you are the temporary owner of the item, you're considered an owner. Even though your ownership is limited, because you know that at a certain point in time, you're not going to be the owner anymore. In fact, we can go even a step further. Even if I have to give it back, as long as that for a period of time I was an owner, I'm considered an owner. However, we also learned just a couple short lines ago in the Gemara that if, let's say, I am one of the Yorshim, and it's an estate, and the Gemara says that if I can eat it, so then I'm the owner. But if I can't eat it, then I can't fulfill my obligation with it. Well, that sounds strange, right? Meaning, what do you mean if I can eat it, if I can't eat it? Matana amanas lahachzir, I'm not allowed to eat it. And meanwhile, I can fulfill my obligation. So why in the case of the estate do we throw in this idea of criteria of ownership is whether or not I can eat it or I can't eat it? So basically what the Rashbam does is now is he basically says like this. It's you have to say something. And this is the way he understands the Gemara. He basically says, look, in terms of temporary ownership, it's very clear from the Gemara that works. That's considered ownership. So what's this idea by the estate where the criteria there is whether or not I eat or I don't eat it? So the Rashbam introduces the idea that in order to be considered an owner, you have to be a sole proprietor. Obviously, the Rashbam doesn't use that language. That's my language. But it's basically, we're going to read it together. I'm going to show it to you inside.
Meaning no conditions?
Meaning no partner. Meaning you have to be the sole proprietor of the esrog, and you cannot own it in partnership with anybody else. He says, so, in terms of the matana manas lahachzir, during the time that I own it, am I sharing that ownership with anyone? Is there a partner in it? No.
Now, there are restrictions.
There are restrictions and there's a condition, but in the temporary time point in time, I am the owner, and therefore I can be yotzei zayin with the esrog. In the case of the estate, you see, I own the estate, but so do my brothers. And I am not a sole proprietor of it. So, if I can eat it, so that means now that I am enough of an owner, I have sole proprietorship of it, where I can be yotzei zayin. Watch now, everything I just said is straight out of the Rashbam. I'm going to read the Rashbam inside. V'im lav lo yatza. Rashbam is on Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, halfway down in the Amud, before the lines become wide. The Rashbam writes, V'im lav lo yatza dichtiv, the Torah says, l'kachtem lachem, mishalachem sheyehe, kulo shelo, v'lo shemiksasar shelo. The Torah says very clearly that if I just have share in something, that's not enough for esrog. Now, in other areas of halacha, this is going to be so interesting, at least to me. In other areas of halacha, shares is enough to be considered an owner. The Rashbam points out, afagav dedoshin b'shchitas chulin beperek reshus agez bigdechem arisoschem trumaschem l'rabas tal shashutfim v'isus hashutfim utvus hashutfim shechayavim betitzus v'chal v'truma. So I'm only going to explain one of these examples. But the tzitzis, for example, let's say I don't own the entire beged, but I own just part of the beged. That's enough to be chayiv in the mitzvah of tzitzis. Right? Practical halacha. You go to the shul that you're a member of. If you go to the shul you're a member of, so the talis rack. So do you own the talis? Yeah, you own a share of it. Meaning you pay dues, you pay membership, so you are a part owner in that talis. You have the right to take the talis and make a bracha on that talis. Because as long as you have shares of ownership, as small as that share is, as long as you have shares of ownership, you are considered the owner, and therefore you have the right to make a bracha on that talis. If I bar...
Huh? You have to be a complete owner for...
Right, and the Rashbam is explaining what's the difference. Meaning what the Rashbam now has to articulate is, why by Lulav and Esrog do you have to be a sole proprietor? Why by other mitzvahs of ownership, shares is enough? So, and the Rashbam is going to explain. So the Betzitzah V'chal V'chumah, Hu Adin Nami, Yavik Siv Hacha, Pre-Eitz Hadarchem. Now the Halacha would have been the same by Esrog if the Torah would have said, now I'm right, you know I'm not the grammar expert, but if the Torah would have said something like Pre-Eitz Hadarchem, No, instead of saying the word lachem by itself, I feel shal shudfas. Avakaven dichsiv lachem tzarich shei kula shalom. Once the Torah invokes the usage of the language of lachem, so that means full ownership. Shares is not enough. Va'idlok siv lachach talacha hain lamidrash meneshet telekicha lachol echav echli dashina b'masechet sukkah v'taras kohanim. And also, right, lachach talacha, instead of saying the word lachachtem, is that because everybody needs to fulfill the mitzvah, and you cannot have, it's not just a one person fulfills for everybody. Now, Uminak Shalanu, this next part of the Rashbam is fantastic. Just to come for this next part, it was worth it today. The next part of the Rashbam discusses the following. Now, we've already covered the idea in this year that, you know, in the 21st century in America, thank God we're spoiled. I mean, we are. But in other words, but just to understand how spoiled we are, right, it used to be, back in Europe, when they fulfill the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, maybe they got their hands on an esrog. Maybe. One esrog for the entire community, if they were lucky. In other words, they didn't have the kind of plenty and you remember, right? One esrog for the entire community. Okay. In other words, they were lucky if they got their hands on an esrog. Right? Stories are told by Rav Chaim, by the Gra, where basically, you know, they struggled on sukkahs to get an esrog, to get an lulav. Meaning, it's not like No, that one doesn't look good. that one has an imperfection. I'm going to get that. It's like we literally cannot even imagine, like, you know, how blessed we are. Anyway, so Uminak Shalanu, the Rashbam writes, Shenagul Avar Kolakal BeEsrog Echad. So basically, now the Rashbam has to explain, how do we do that? Meaning, you understand that they only had one Esrog, but we also just learned together that in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Esrog, you have to be the singular owner of that Esrog. So how does that work? So the Rashbam says, I'll tell you how it works. Now, maybe the Rashbam says not everybody knows this. I mean, everyone who came to Daf today knows this. But maybe not everyone knows this, but you have to say this. And it's what we do. Da'atenu maskemes laseis kol echa b'matana eschal kol l'chavero. Look, we all bought the one Esrog. We are all the shareholders of the one Esrog. But we also have the following agreement. Explicit, implicit, but we all agree that when one person is holding it, I'm going to give all my shares over to him. And everybody in the community is going to give their shares over to him. So at the time when he uses it, he's going to be the sole proprietor. Now, even if we don't articulate this, but it's basically, it's understood as part of the agreement of having a singular esrog. The Rashbam writes, you know, it's no worse than matana manas l'achzer. We just learned in the Gemara together that if I'm going to be gifting something temporarily, in the temporary time that I gift it to him, it's all his. Good. That Rashbam says that's what we're going to have to do in a scenario where we only have one esrog for the entire community. Now, and the Rashbam then points out, Hanimila biyom tov rishon, aval biyom tov sheni, amina mitoch shiyotze b'shal, yotze b'gazol. Okay, and then the Rashbam points out that obviously is only necessary for yom tov rishon, it's not necessary for yom tov sheni. Okay. Wow. That was good. So let's just quickly recap where we stand today. So today's daf really more discussion in Kinyan Peres is Kinyan Aguf Alav Kinyan Aguf Dami. Machlok is Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says that Kinyan Peres is considered. Sorry, let me say that. Yeah, I was right. According to Rav Yochanan, Kinyan Peres is considered Kinyan Aguf. Reish Lakish is of the opinion that Kinyan Peres is not considered a Kinyan Aguf, and that Machlokis is going to play out in terms of. In terms of Bikurim, in terms of a person wants to divest himself from the title, okay, of his property, kind of sheltered from any type of mortgage or lien. So, and then the rest of today's daf, really the entirety of today's daf, dedicated to the discussion of when I set up a first and second beneficiary for my estate. How do we look at the first beneficiary? Is he just simply an holder of Peros, or is he considered also a Kone Haguf? Is he have full ownership over the item? And that is a machlokus between Rabbi and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Whereas Rabbi's of the opinion that when the first one's holding it, he's just holding it, he has usage to it, but he doesn't have ownership of it. Whereas according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, no. Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that the first one has full ownership of the property, could do with it whatever he wants. But as the Gemara already pointed out a number of times in today's daf, even according to Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, there's letter of the law and there's also spirit of the law. Letter of the law is first beneficiary owns it. Spirit of the law is he knows that there is a second beneficiary waiting after he goes. So what he should do is he shouldn't sell it. May he sell it? Will it be effective? Yes. Should he do so? No. Abai in fact describes that somebody who goes over to the first beneficiary and nudges him and says, you know what? Sell it now. You own it now. So the Abai describes that person as a Rasha Aram. The Gemara goes on to point out that the halacha follows like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the first beneficiary is considered the full owner. And the Gemara gives examples where you can even, if there are avadim, you can free them. If there's linen, you can make it into tachrichin. You are the full owner. And then the Gemara finished up today with a discussion of this kind of structure regarding an esrog. If the first beneficiary receives an esrog with a second beneficiary who's waiting in the wings, so can the first beneficiary use it for the mitzvah of lulav and esrog? According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, the answer is obviously yes. according to Rebbe, the Gemara suggested that maybe even Rebbe would agree to that as well. And then finally, what we concluded today with is the idea of, let's say I am part of, I stand to inherit the estate, and included in the estate is an esrog. We haven't divided the estate yet. Can I use the esrog? So the Gemara says, well, if I can eat it, I can fulfill my mitzvah of esrog. Why should that be? And we spent a lot of time today with the Rashbam explaining this idea that in order to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, I have to be a sole proprietor of the esrog. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up right in the middle of the amud with a story.